Fightblood.com. Fightblood.com.
Hello and welcome to BoagWorld.com, the podcast for all those involved in designing, developing and running websites on a daily basis. My name's Paul Boag.
And my name is Marcus Lillington.
And we are here once again.
Yes.
In the last of the season.
I know.
And we come to discuss today the last part of the puzzle that is working with clients, which is what the hell to do when they give you crap feedback. That's essentially what we're looking at. In the last episode in the series, I spoke about the challenges of getting design approval. And I explained that by talking with the client and involving them in the process and giving them a sense of ownership, we can increase our chances of getting approval for our design. However, what happens when they ask other people to comment on the design? That's where things start going wrong. I think we may have the client on board, but that doesn't mean that other stakeholders will be convinced. After all, they won't have gone on that same journey of a collaboration that our client will have. So we need to overcome that problem, and that's really what I want to talk about today.
It still happens even today.
Absolutely.
You know.
Even with us, and we've worked hard to kind of avoid this problem, we still have problems with clients going away and showing the design to other people. And I think it's important to say that that's okay. I don't think we can expect people to make a decision about a design and sign off a design all by themselves. You know, the majority of women can't go clothes shopping without somebody with them to tell them they look beautiful. And that's a
dangerous ground. Bloody hell.
All right. Blokes are the same when you're buying a car. You feel a need to take someone else there to stand there and go, you know, I'm not sure about that. You know,
have someone else kick the tyres with you.
Exactly. You know,
there you go.
I think it's built in us. I think we all have that kind of desire to get somebody else's opinion about stuff. And it's very hard to make opinion by yourself. I'm listening to a book at the moment called Brain Rules. And one of the brain rules is this desire to talk with one another and to get other people's opinions. And they've done some amazing scientific studies where someone has gone away and they've researched in depth into the best car for them. And they've gone through this whole process about buying a car. And then they take their mate along to see the car. And they've kind of primed this mate.
Yeah.
And the mate says something like, oh yeah, I had a lecturer at college that drove that and I really didn't like him. And the person won't buy the car because their mate has had a negative attitude towards it. So we do have this need to consult with other people is the long and rambling point there.
Yeah. I mean, and sometimes for poor reasons, like we're sheep. Other times also because you are genuinely still researching and you don't want to be sold a pup or you in a kind of non-buying something situation, you're trying to collaborate to get something better.
Yeah.
That's human. That's why we're
social animals.
Yeah. Well, also, and why we've done so well.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think, you know, there are also practical reasons from a web design point of view, like you have to get the boss to sign it off, or you have to get, you know, some department head that's really opinionated on board or whatever else. So I think it's inevitable that our clients are going to be showing the work we do to other people, and we need to work with that and around that.
Yeah.
And I think the beginning way to solve the problem is on how we present the design. I think that's a huge part of the equation that often we don't put enough thought into. I think the problem is that often we don't get to present the design to all the people that are going to comment on it.
Well, you can just email everyone, can't you?
Oh, shut up. You know that's wrong. You're just being argumentative now.
You just attach the JPEG in the email. That's right, isn't it?
No. It's not right. Okay. You know that that's not right. Yeah, we may get to present to the immediate point of contact, but what about the others that the client shows the design to? Now,
You've got a cold, haven't you, Paul?
I have got a cold. It's really annoying.
Did we start this series with you having a cold, and now you've got another
I'm
one?
Sickly boy.
You are very sick.
I am.
What you need to do is smoke and drink like I do, Paul.
Do you know, it's another thing that in this Brain Rules book that I'm listening to is saying about how the immune system is destroyed by stress, and it is the stress of working with you that means that I get all these illnesses.
Well, but that's okay, because I let you go off on holiday for the rest of the year.
See, this is why I'm stressed, because I have to listen to this kind of abuse the whole time. So, yeah, you're right. I mean, what you were saying, you were being sarcastic, but it is true that, you know, you can't just send an email with a JPEG attached and go, what do you think?
Yeah.
Even if the client is on board and you've taken them through the process and you feel you can trust the client with a question like, what do you think? Even though that question is obviously so loaded as to what's your personal opinion? Do you like green or not? Which is the last kind of comment you want. You don't know what's going to happen to that JPEG afterwards, who it's going to be handed on to, what contexts are going to see it.
Yeah, I was going to say, I mean, even from the other angle, even if you ask all the right questions in the email, still don't send it in an email.
Yeah.
Because someone will print it out and it'll be all the wrong colours.
Yeah.
It'll be like,
so, it's the wrong way of doing it.
Yeah.
So the way that we've kind of solved the problem at Headscape, and every time I say this, people love it, right? So I can guarantee the next point I make, you'll go, damn, that's a good idea. It's not often that I actually think we have a good idea. And most of the time, I don't understand why people listen. But this one you will like. You ready for this? The way that we present our designs, if we cannot present them face-to-face with all of the people involved, and I think that's the big if, because obviously an ideally situation is to meet with people face-to-face. If we can't do that, we record a video of our design presentation and circulate that to all the design decision makers. So essentially, instead of passing a JPEG around, you pass a video, and that video has the JPEG nicely presented. Now you have to worry about your compression, otherwise it can look shit, but just very, very simple with the voiceover over the top of it explaining it.
Yep.
And this approach works so well, doesn't it, Marcus? Back me up.
Yes, it does, Paul.
Well,
there's two approaches. The reason, when we don't always record a video, we record a video when we know that we can't talk to everyone about
it. I think that's an important
that's
caveat.
Because often, it's not necessarily, you said whether we can do face-to-face, if we can't do face-to-face, then we do video. That's not necessarily true. If we can have a conference call with the entire team and
sure,
the decision-makers,
yes, that's true.
Then a conference call is okay. But if we do that, what we do is we don't let them see the design until 5 minutes before the call.
Yeah.
Basically, they get sent an email saying, click on this link, and I'm going to go off on another tangent.
That's fine.
This is quite important, rather than this kind of a, how do we present designs? What we've done lately, which has worked really nicely, is basically, and I suspect not most, but quite a lot of other design agencies do this, you basically have a project page that lists the wireframes, links to all the different wireframes in order so that you can go back and see the process.
Yeah.
All the different mood boards, all the different designs, all the templates, everything, all nicely laid out so that the client can go back in at any point and go, well, I really like that thing we did in the first mood board, and it's all there. And basically, every time that a new design is put together, then we add the link in and like a minute before the call.
Yeah.
And then present it during the call. But as Paul was saying, if you can't guarantee that everyone's going to be in on that call, record a video.
Yeah.
Otherwise, you end up with
I don't like it because it's green or whatever.
Yeah. Because you'll have done the presentation to 50% of the people and everyone else just gets,
what do you think of this?
What do you think of this? Yes.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, the approach has several advantages. First of all, presentation and design are inseparable, in my opinion, because the design is only viewable as part of the video. It can only be shown with the accompanying presentation. You can't show it without that.
Yep.
So we therefore can guarantee people will have all of the information they require to provide constructive criticism of the design. Second advantage really of a video is call qualities are not always great. We've had, and sometimes I think this puts it even above the conference call.
Yeah, that's a really good
point. Sometimes we have had conference calls where there's been a lot of people on the line, and it's been a nightmare, hasn't it?
Mm. Yeah, I do agree with that.
Well, you don't have that problem with video. You know, the audio quality can be assured, and most video recording software allows the presenter to even appear in a small little box so you can see him as well. And I think that's great, because certainly with me, perhaps this is probably an indication of me, but if they can, if the people that I'm presenting to can see me, they kind of get carried along with my enthusiasm and passion. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
So being, I think that's another advantage it has over even conference calls. Although I do accept that conference calls allows that interaction and answering questions, which is better if you can guarantee the call quality. Mm. Another reason for video presentations is the presentation can be scripted. So not everybody finds it easy to present. And so I know, for example, Lee, I think he actually writes out what he's going to say. Actually, he doesn't anymore. He's got cocky in his old age. When he started off, he used to write out the whole thing so he can, you know, he can say cover all the points and he can think about it all beforehand, while in a presentation it's like, oh shit, and it goes off in directions you don't expect, and not everybody's comfortable with that. Another good reason for videos is that all those providing comments get to see the presentation. So again, it's hard to arrange a conference call sometimes where everybody can attend. And often it's the most important people that are the ones that can't attend the call because they're super busy.
That's like very true. Very true.
So a video means that they can watch it in their own time. And because what often happens is you go, oh yeah, let's have a conference call. We're going to arrange a conference call to present the design. Oh, unfortunately, the MD can't make it, but let's have the call anyway. So you do the presentation to the to everybody else, and then the MD just gets shown the design and says, "What do you think?" And the whole thing is suddenly derailed. So that's why I like the videos, even over conference calls, personally.
Yep, it does make sense, actually. I suppose it's because it's a bit more effort to do them, and there's always a deadline and that kind of thing. You think, well, we can get this iteration of the design will be done by Thursday lunchtime, so let's have a call at Thursday lunchtime, rather than spending probably the majority of Thursday afternoon recording a video.
I disagree with that. I think it does with some people. Right? But for example, me and Lee just do it in one take now, straight through. So it takes us no longer than it would take us to do a conference call.
Yeah.
Okay, you've got to then save and upload the video, but that's about it. And to be honest, by the time you get everybody on
the
call,
I'm not disagreeing with it. It's just saying that's probably the reason why.
Another reason I like videos is because it gives the client time to digest the presentation as well.
Yeah.
You know, I hate that bit in the conference calls that inevitably happens. You do your presentation, then you get to the end, and essentially you go, oh, so what do you think then? and you end up back at the same kind of, you know,
I like that though, because
it puts them on the spot and they feel like they have to say something.
Yeah, and that's not always a bad thing.
No, so because it's much harder to say I don't like it to your face.
Yes.
But that feels a bit manipulative to me.
It is a little bit manipulative, but the good thing about that is that it gives you the opportunity to kind of deal with issues that are kind of personal opinion, for example.
Yes.
There and then.
Yes. I agree with that. You almost want, in my opinion, what you want is a video, give them time to digest it, then have a conference call.
Yeah.
That's kind of my ideal, I think.
Just get rid of the opportunity to manipulate people with that process.
Yes, but I actually think...
I am joking, by the way.
Yeah, I know. Giving somebody time to sit with the design and kind of let it sink in actually can be beneficial. Because often your initial reaction is, we don't like change.
Two designs we've been working on lately, and I've said to both the designers in this case that, look, you know, we had a bit of a, not an issue, but like, you know, this bit didn't work for the client. And we did an iteration of that. And I was saying to the designer yesterday, oh, this is, you know, this could be painful, blah, 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 blah. But, you know, in the end, it's like one tiny change. And that's fine. Then we'll move on. So I think the process of presenting and getting people to kind of talk about it in a conference call situation immediately is, and I can't quite put my finger on why, but I think there's a real value in that.
Yeah,
I know we're kind of joking about it being, you know, we can manipulate people into not saying anything nasty, because that's not really true. If somebody doesn't,
no, so they'll tell us.
They'll tell you.
That is very true.
I think I don't know why it just focuses the mind or focuses the group.
Yeah, I've got mixed feelings about it. Because what it can lead to,
it's
those
just worked really well on a couple of occasions lately.
But on other occasions, it can lead to kind of design by committee, where people are essentially trying to work out.
There is a little bit of that going on.
Yeah,
yeah. But then that's, we've talked about earlier in these episodes that we've been recording, that to a certain extent, the client does need to love it. They're the people.
Absolutely. But we've also talked about how design by committee means that people try and meet a consensus in the room. Somebody says on the call something along the lines of, you know, I don't feel this area, you know, this is working particularly well. And then someone says, well, what if we did this? And before you know it, the designer's lost control. I prefer the kind of divide and conquer technique of of getting individual, now he's being manipulative, yeah. Getting individual feedback and allowing the designer to go away and think about it.
Yeah. It's tricky, isn't it?
It is tricky.
Design is a bugger. And that's what all this is about.
Well, that's why we've essentially dedicated two episodes out of six to the issue of design, really.
It really is. It's weird, because I was convinced that we were going to have, you know, it was going to be another iteration. It was going to be one of those kind of almost blind alleys where it was like, let's just start again.
Yeah.
And then, no, all fine.
Yeah. It does. But if we'd been recording this 6 weeks down the line, you could be saying the complete opposite, because it just depends on what's currently happened, doesn't it?
I suppose so.
But here's a final killer reason why I like videos, is that they allow you to demonstrate interaction, right? Because websites are becoming more and more dynamic with JavaScript elements and responsive design, all this kind of stuff. Mm-hmm. A static comp can never show that. If you've got if you actually build a kind of prototype of it and put it online, and you say to the, okay, now make the browser slightly smaller so you can see how, you don't know what they're really doing, you know, or they're viewing it in IE6, or they've got JavaScript turned off or whatever. but in a video, you could demonstrate all that stuff. And you know exactly what the other person is going to see at the other end.
Yeah,
and it means that you can make little prototypes and not have to worry about cross-browser compatibility or whatever, as long as it looks good on your browser when you record the video.
Don't agree. I agree with what you're saying, but then you're going to want them to go and test it on their own machine.
Yeah, but not at that stage. Yes, eventually, I agree, but we're talking about, you know, just presenting the initial designs. And these days, a lot of the designs that you're presenting, you know, what makes the design is the interactive elements.
Yeah, definitely.
The expanding and collapsing and the carousels and all of the other kind of stuff that goes on. And at that initial presentation, they might say the whole thing's gone in the wrong direction. So you don't want to spend ages getting it to work in IE7 or whatever. You know,
again, I'm not disagreeing. I'm just saying that you do need to consider it.
That will be a stage, but I think it happens after this initial feedback that they're actually playing with it and experimenting with it themselves. Whether you present using a video or, you know, or in person, I guess the next stage is, well, what do you include in a design presentation? What should you talk about, if that makes sense? You know, if you, whether you're doing it as a video or a person, doesn't make any difference. It's what are you saying?
Yeah.
I think presenting a design, and I'm talking, when I talk about design here, I'm talking about whether it be a mood board or a wireframe or a final design comp, that you kind of need to show the natural progression of what has already been agreed. And that way, I think the client's much more likely to accept it, because they can see that it's just the next step on from what they've already agreed with and what they've already done. So to achieve this, I think your presentation needs to heavily reference previous work and how that's influenced the design. So, for example, if you're presenting a mood board, you should explain how the how the personality that has been previously agreed with the client is reflected in that mood board and that design. With wireframes, you need to demonstrate how, you know, they reflect the initial sketches that you did in that wireframing workshop we talked about. And also show how you have accommodated the agreed calls to actions, business objectives, and user tasks. And finally, if you're presenting a kind of proposed design, you need to show the client how it brings together business objectives, mood boards, and wireframes. So sometimes when I'm presenting a design in a video, I'll actually show the wireframes and I'll show the mood boards first before showing the final design.
Do you make them fade into one another like that?
Yeah, in a fancy way. That's the trouble with the biggest problem with videos that makes them take longer is being designers, you need to make them fancy, so you end up with lower thirds and introductory videos and all that kind of stuff. Yeah, you can't do that. So where I think, so you kind of show the process of how you've come to the design and how it builds on what has already been agreed. Of course, the reality is that sometimes as you're going through the design process, you actually choose to deviate from what was agreed. Often the mood board, for example, you change it when it comes to a real design. And where you do deviate from what has been agreed, or where you introduce new elements, you need to present a really strong case to back up those changes. Yeah. So that needs to be a big part of it as well. So I endeavour to support my designs in three ways, right? First of all, testing. If I'm concerned that the client will be unsure about a design choice that I've made, I'll carry out some testing to justify that approach. Sometimes that testing is very lightweight and is not a big deal at all. You know, it can be something just as simple as, you know, putting the design online and throwing it out to Twitter. Sometimes it can be grabbing the person from the desk next to me to have a look at it, whatever. But I do try and do some testing. Second way I justify changes that I'm making to the design is using reference material. So I wrote about this in chapter 4, where I talked about the idea of, you know, referencing material and stuff, other experts' opinions. Things like studies and statistics are a powerful way of improving your credibility. They're also an excellent way to justify your design decisions. So, for example, if there are numerous studies and experts who dispel the myth of the fold, then it's easy to justify, you know, the requirement for scrolling on your design, for example. You're looking blank.
No, I was just thinking about the fold is a funny one, isn't it?
Yeah, let's not even get into that.
It does exist.
Yeah, it does exist, yeah. But it doesn't mean that users don't scroll, is the point.
No.
That I was making here.
Yeah.
So you can put... Yeah, it doesn't matter. That's a whole nother conversation.
I'm moving on to the next series about talking about sort of mobile and things like that. I mean, the fold... Came to the fore with the EDF project when the design that
on a mobile device. You're talking
well,
about.
It was on a small laptop actually, and right. It was like it just kind of just so happened that on this particular device, you could see on the initial design work we'd done, you could only see the carousel, this beautiful image, and it was like that really was the bottom of the page. It looked like the
right.
finished design.
Yeah,
so that's when we did that kind of work with.
Vertical responsiveness. Yeah. Yeah, which is really good. If you haven't checked that out, do a search on responsiveness and the fold on BOAG World, and you'll find a brilliant piece of work that Ed did on that.
Yeah,
which even Jeremy Keith said, Paul, the BOAG World's actually posted something useful.
Yeah, something of worth.
Yeah, so it must be worth checking out. Yeah, but yeah, you're right. And then the final way I endeavour to support my designs is by showing examples. You know, nothing's more convincing than showing the client an example. If a major site like the BBC does something, you're proposing doing, you know, and you're proposing doing the same thing in your design, it does significantly strengthen your case.
Yes, it's the No one got fired for hiring IBM attitude.
Yes, absolutely. Basically. So. So there's some things that you want to include in your design presentations. I've talked about, you know, showing previous work. I've talked about justifying changes. But also, it's worth preempting common objections in your presentation. So our experience of working with clients gives us, to be honest, a good insight. And by I'm talking about everybody, web designers, mm-hmm. you know, have this good insight into the kind of things that clients are likely to throw up as issues. You know, so these include areas such as white space, choice of colour.
Fill that gap.
Yeah. Content above the fold, yeah. Size of logo, all that kind of stuff. So we avoid that, as in Headscape avoids that, by mentioning these issues, you know, sorry. I think the standard way that a lot of us deal with that is we kind of just hope the client doesn't bring it up.
Right, yeah.
Right? However, I think, and probably the technique that we use at Headscape, is to kind of instead preempt those issues with the client and raise them ourselves. And there's two reasons that we do this. First, it demonstrates that we have thought about these issues and are not just reacting to their criticism. Mm. So this reinforces our expertise and experience. Second, preempting issues, I think, has a psychological effect. I think as humans, once we state a position, like, I need you to make the logo bigger, we need to defend and be consistent with that position, even when faced with evidence to the contrary.
Absolutely. I've said something. Therefore, I'm not going to back down.
I mean, classic argument, my wife.
Here we go.
You know, I could... She gets stroppy about something I've done. I present a perfectly logical and reasonable argument about how what I did was perfectly understandable and it was the right thing to do. Will she change her position once she stated it? No, she won't.
Yeah.
And I think that is in human nature.
Yes, I think you're right there, Paul.
So therefore, if you can preempt it, then... and give that argument before they take that position, then they there's no backing down to do. There's no changing the mind because they haven't kind of said it out loud. If we preempt these issues before the client raises their objections, they don't have to defend their position. And so
more psychological manipulation, basically, from Mr. Barrick.
It's helping the client save face. Is that a bad thing?
No, it's not a bad thing at all.
There we go.
It's very sensible. It means you've planned properly.
Yeah. So, furthermore, the client, you know, often... this is manipulation.
Right, okay.
If you preempt an issue by going something like... A lot of clients get caught up on this idea of the fold.
Yeah.
But, you know, there's a lot of studies out there that really show this is a very out-of-date way of thinking, you know, and that actually users do scroll extensively. And Jacob Nielsen has written about this, etc. And actually, you know, here's the whole history of how it came about, right? Hmm. If you as the client are sitting there thinking, I don't want it to scroll, I don't want it to scroll, there's no way they're going to say that now because they're going to look like a complete arse if they do. And they're going to look like an idiot, and nobody wants to look like an idiot. So therefore, preempt it.
Yes.
Okay.
Wise words.
I really am looking like a manipulative person now, aren't I?
We've been here many times before, Paul. Don't worry about it.
So finally, your presentation. This is the final thing I want to kind of look at. Is your presentation should suggest some guidelines about the kind of feedback you're going to find useful, right? Yes. So this really comes to the nuts and bolts of what I want to kind of get into today, which is this whole area of gathering the right kind of feedback. You know, we've all had that experience about clients coming. I think a lot of the reasons why we don't like clients providing feedback is because we often find that the feedback is not very helpful. The reason the feedback is not very helpful is because we're not asking the right questions. You know, we are asking that, what do you think of the design, which focuses them on their personal opinions. You know, design is so subjective. So, you know, personal opinion isn't always going to be valid. Just because the client dislikes the design doesn't make it wrong. And a really good example of this was, do you remember working on the University of Portsmouth website?
Yeah.
Back in the MySpace days, you know, when MySpace was popular.
It was the multicoloured swap shop design.
It was. And the target...
No one will know what that means. No. That is such a British reference
of people over a certain age. Yeah, absolutely. So the target audience was undergraduate students. So we produced a design that appealed to the MySpace generation. The client hated it. I hated it. It was horrible. It was disgustingly garish and busy. And not at all what we would look for in a website. However, when testing, the design proved very successful. And we had to set aside our personal opinions and implement what was right for the audience. And that is why we need to, you know, reconsider the kind of feedback we're asking for clients. So instead of asking, what do you think? We need to be asking, for example, how will your users respond to this? Because that's a very different question that will generate a very different type of feedback. So by asking specific structured questions, we focus the client's attention on criteria by which the design should be judged. So I've put down a few questions that might be useful to ask. Things like, do you believe the aesthetics will appeal to the target audience? Does the website help achieve the business objectives?
I would be more detailed on that one. And does it meet business objective A? Does it meet business objective B?
Yeah, absolutely.
Because clients like that one very much.
Yeah.
And if the answer to that is yes, and they've just been negative about something, you're on to a real winner.
Yes. You know, will the target audience be easy to complete? Will it be easy for the target audience to complete certain key tasks? Mm-hmm. Are the calls to actions clearly visible, and do they encourage action? Questions like this will teach the client how to judge the effectiveness of otherwise of a design, and discourage comments like "I don't like the colour." You can also use structured questions to remind the client of what has previously been agreed. They can show how the design is the culmination of a collaborative process. So examples of that would be, is the design in line with the aesthetics established in the mood boards? Does the design communicate the brand values of your organization? Does the design reflect what was agreed in the wireframes? Is the design consistent with the personality we chose together for the site? Mm. Now, you'll notice that all of these questions encourage a yes or no answer. As you said, if the answer to the question is yes, then the client has little reason not to approve the design. Of course, they might personally not like the design. However, if you warn them about their personal opinions may be getting in the way and that it might colour their judgment, then most will be able to set aside those personal feelings if they can confidently answer yes to all of those questions. Hmm. If the client feels the design fails to meet these criteria, you know, outlined in the questions, things do become a little bit more complicated and need to be handled with sensitivity. And this is where you get into the whole area of handling disagreements. And handling disagreements is a crucial skill that every web designer needs to have. And I think many of us are not very good at, and I include myself in that. Yes, don't look at me like that. We've got to balance the client's happiness with producing the best website possible. Because remember what I said before, the client has to like the website. They have to, even if they don't personally like it, they have to recognise its value.
And they mustn't feel manipulated into it either.
No.
Because they won't
bounced
like it.
Into it. Yeah, absolutely. If we simply give the client what they're asking for, we become demoralised and they don't receive the full expertise. So there is a balance to be struck here. On the other hand, if we're constantly arguing with them, we could end up with a website that they don't like. And if they don't like the website, they're not going to invest in it long term. So what's the answer to this problem? Well, I think there are four answers, in a sense, four criteria by which you can kind of avoid major disagreements and arguments. First of all, swallow your pride. And I am speaking to myself here. We need to accept that the client does have good ideas, and we shouldn't reject them simply because we didn't think of them.
It's often, yeah.
And this goes back to what you were saying before about the client does have the kind of, can have good design ideas.
Absolutely. And it's also a question, sometimes it does come down to opinion. Because if you ask a client, does the design meet objective A?
Yes.
And you think it does, but they might not think it does.
Yes.
And then it's really a case of they're the client. Unless you can persuade them this or show them a reason where you were coming from on why you think that works, if they don't agree, then you need to iterate, basically.
Yeah, I think there's more to do, mine, there. I wouldn't give up so easily. I think I would ask one of these points, this fourfold approach.
Well, yeah, of course.
Is to ask why.
Yes, you wouldn't just go...
Got to blow my nose. I've got no choice.
I've turned him off briefly.
Okay, better.
He's back.
That's good. Sorry about that. Right.
Yeah, of course. But the bottom line on it is, they may give you a reason why you go, oh, I hadn't thought of that.
Absolutely.
And then
but
it's time to iterate.
Both parties have got to be convinced. Mm. So asking the question why is an important way to understand what the client's thinking is.
Sure.
And also, for example, you know, if they don't feel that the design, I don't know, justifies user needs, you do need to understand why they believe it's failing. Because otherwise you can't iterate it, because you don't know how to iterate it. So that is a part of it, is asking why. Swallowing your pride is another part of it. Picking your battles is a big one. It's fine to disagree with the client if you passionately believe in your position. However, let's face it, on a lot of occasions, you don't feel that strongly. You know, okay, should the box have rounded corners or not? Do you really care? Is it really that big a deal? Should you really be digging your feet in over this one? You know, oftentimes, it's better to let them, you know, to go with their idea. You know, if it's not going to be damaging to the design particularly, if it's not going to be that big a deal, then, you know, let them have their way. Because when you do dig in your heels then, it's going to be so much more meaningful.
Exactly.
Because, the client's going to go, oh, they've suddenly objected to this while they've let me have all these other things. So, you know, they're going to take you a bit more seriously. It's the whole boy that cried wolf thing. If you cry wolf for every little thing, then nobody's going to believe you when you really are crying wolf. And then finally, in this kind of approach to dealing with disagreements, I'd say, if in doubt, test. If you and the client really disagree over an issue, test it with real users. This will inevitably break the deadlock, and it always provides a really clear way forward. So testing is really worthwhile. So that is really all I wanted to cover on this last episode of the season.
Episode.
But I do want to leave you with some stuff. You know, hopefully I've demonstrated that client-centric web design is a better way to build websites in this series. You know, it does create better websites, it creates happier clients, and it makes an easier life for you. And managing comments and feedback is a key component of all of that. So before you kind of close this season down and consign it to your iTunes trash bin,
buy the book.
buy the book at boagworld.com/season/3. I would encourage you to make some small but significant changes in the way that you present designs and gather feedback. So those are, just to recap, record your presentations. Video presentations will transform the way you present design. It has at Headscape, and I think it will for you. It leads to better presentations, improved comments, and it always impresses the client. The client loves, you know, oh, you've done me a video, you know.
That's true. Yes, and definitely.
I don't think that's something we touched on before, but it is a good thing. Second thing I really encourage you to do is prepare the ground. Suggest the type of comments you want. You know, place an emphasis on identifying problems and not solutions that we've talked about before. Finally, deal with the problems, you know, preempt those common issues such as white space, color and branding before they ever become an issue. Nip it in the bud. And finally, stop asking open questions such as what do you think of the design, and start leading the client through the feedback process more. I'm aware that this series may have challenged some of your preconceptions. You know, I know I've suggested that your role isn't just about producing websites, but it is one of offering a service. And you may feel that that's not what you signed up for when you became a web designer. However, I really want to ensure you that done right, client work can be really rewarding and satisfying. I love my job. I honestly love it. You get to build lasting collaborative relationships with people working across a range of disciplines and sectors that you just don't get in other forms of web design. Client work's never dull, and you'll always be learning. And if you embrace that role, you can, you know, have one hell of a ride. I really love it. And I know you can too, if you just kind of... Oh, sorry, this is getting all sappy and crap towards the end. But I am enthusiastic about this, and I'm passionate about it.
No, yeah. Yeah, no, yeah.
No, yeah.
Yeah, no.
Yeah, no,
no,
yeah. Yeah.
I think one of the most important things for web designers out there, freelancers, people working in agencies or whatever, it's so important that they are working on projects that have been priced properly and that have sensible deadlines. Then it's fun. Then you get a chance to work with clients properly. I did down Andy Budd on an earlier episode about his article, but he's dead right from one aspect, that there are a lot of people out there who are just out to make as quick and as fast a buck as possible. So, yeah, if you're stuck in a position where you're not, where you're finding that client work isn't that rewarding, chances are you're working for the wrong company.
Yeah. I mean, yeah, I would slightly disagree with what you said with the whole deadlines, not price, get the price right. But if you've got a good client relationship, if you've got that really good working relationship with the client, and there is a ridiculous deadline for some real legitimate reason, like...
Yeah, that's true.
It's actually fun.
That can be,
you know, that pressure of pulling together and getting something out the door can be fun as well. It's about the relationship for me.
I suppose it's a case of, as long as the person doing the work, the person who's doing this design work that we've been talking about, you know, that we've been talking about getting sign-off for, etc., has... has had a part in saying how long it's going to take for them to do
If you just get lumbered with it, then you're stuffed.
So,
But, I mean, I remember, for example, working with Chris Moose on the Natural England website. It had to be done in this ridiculous time. Mm. And I had a whale of a time. It was a ridiculous project. But because I liked the guy, I had a good working relationship with him, it was a fun project that, you know, I kind of cared about because I wanted to please him. You know, it was brilliant fun. For me, it's all about that relationship. If you can get that relationship right, all of this manipulative stuff we joke about, all these techniques and stuff, kind of fall away over time. They become irrelevant. It's just two people working together in a good relationship. And that's what it should be.
Yeah.
You know, it should be two people working as equals to achieve an aim. And that, for me, is what it's all about.
That's the nirvana.
Yes. And you get it with, you don't ever achieve that with all clients.
No.
But, you know, if you can up the number of those that you can do that with, that's brilliant.
Absolutely.
So, you're going to leave us with a good cliffhanger joke, are you?
Well, not a cliffhanger. Well,
crescendo of a joke.
I'm going to do two. And the reason I'm going to do two is because I think I might have told them before. I'm thinking
people have heard one or the other, but not both.
Or maybe one of them I haven't told before.
Yeah.
But I can't decide because I'm so crap at organising things. I'm looking at this thinking, that's a good joke. Probably means I've said it before.
Anyway, did you check on that website someone created of your jokes?
There's only three jokes on it.
Is that all there is?
Yeah. Anyway, right.
Lack of commitment.
I went to the cemetery yesterday. Ringing any bells?
No.
To lay some flowers on a grave.
But I don't normally listen to your jokes.
It's true. As I was standing there, I noticed four grave diggers were walking about with a coffin. 3 hours later, and they're still walking about with it. I thought to myself, they've lost the plot.
Can I do one that my son told me? I just suddenly remembered it. It's a similar kind of joke. So this woman walks into a psychiatrist's office, and she goes, she just babbles. I can't even do it because of my cold.
come on, finish it.
I'm a TP, I'm a wigwam, right?
Okay.
And the psychiatrist turns to her and says, calm down, my love, you're far too tense. Too tense. Get it? Too tense.
That's bloody awful. Right, okay.
Didn't help though, screw it. Go on, now what's yours?
Right, one
more. Perhaps we're going to get people to vote for which of these three jokes is the best. It was funnier when my 9-year-old told me.
Which one was the other one I was going to do? Quick, where is it?
Panic. See, this is so professional.
I think it was this one. I was driving this morning when I saw an AA van parked up. This is like a breakdown.
Roadside recovery.
Exactly, that's it. The driver was sobbing uncontrollably and looked very miserable. I thought to myself, that guy's heading for a breakdown.
They're all the same. But all three of those jokes had the same basic premise.
Yes, absolutely. Yes, they were all a bit poor.
Is that a premise? Anyway, so join us again in September.
Oh, actually September now, is it?
We're committing it to it, maybe. In the meantime, pick yourself up a copy of Client-Centric Web Design, which goes into all of the things that we've covered in this show in loads more detail. And it's only £6.75, an absolute bargain. Presuming it's still £6.75 when this comes out. I hadn't thought about that. I'll have to keep it at £6.75 then. All right, thank you guys for listening, and we'll talk to you soon. Goodbye.
Bye.
Bye.
The podcast for those involved in designing, developing and running websites on a daily basis.